Anyways, fellas, like I'm saying, Street Fighter is way better than Mortal Kombat.
Oh, hell no.
I don't know, man. Dude. People that say that have just, like, it's too mainstream.
Dude, you guys have been drinking way too much. Come, ease up on the moveset, okay?
I like to see fighting in my fighting games.
And that's why I play Street Fighter.
Dude, seriously, does this bar only have moosehead? What the?
Well, what do you expect on Valentine's Day, dude? All the couples are gone. Just a couple of us here enjoying some beers. Let me crack another one.
There
we go.
I don't know, man. Whatever. I just feel like we're a little too drunk to start arguing about this stuff.
Yeah, speak about yourself, man. I've drank 50 of these, and I'm still not even buzzed yet.
I'm on my second one. I babysit my shit. So. Oh, hey, what's up, Axel?
What is it? What's the matter? Somebody's killed her.
It's Harry Warden. He's here. Everybody get the fuck out. Go! Go! Go!
What?
Hold on.
No.
No way.
You know, fuck you guys. I'm out.
Oh, wait. I gotta pee first. Hold on.
Come on, man. Hurry up.
I ain't about to.
No. Leave him behind. He already decided his fate. I'm gone.
Once upon a time, on a sad Valentine, in a place known as Henninger Mine, a legend began. Every woman and man would always remember the time, and those who remained were never the same. You could see the fear in their eyes. Once every year, when the 14th draws near, there's hush all over the town. For the legend they say on the Valentine's Day is a curse that lives on and on. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago.
Hello, freaks and geeks, gals and ghouls, and welcome to another episode of Final Guys presented by Corpses for Conversation. Now, you might notice something weird going on here, and that is the fact that I, Michael Hardesty, am today's host, and for good reason, for we're going to be revisiting My Bloody Valentine. Now, to introduce everyone else in the squad, we got to start off, SoCal Leatherface.
I'm sorry. I'm so damn sorry.
Dimebag the Clown.
If it's one thing I like better than Christmas candy, it's Valentine's candy.
DJ?
Well, I got a Valentine's that she'll never forget.
And obviously, I already said my own name. Y'all know me. Y'all love me. Michael Hardesty, who ordered the Moosehead.
Here's the Moosehead, the beer that captures the spirit of the Canadian wilderness. Brewed by Canada's oldest independent family brewery, Moosehead. The imported beer with a taste that's head and antlers above the rest.
I did, because that's what I'm drinking.
I don't care what anyone else says. It's a good damn beer.
I like it. That's why I bought it. Dime, I apparently can drink like 50 of these and not feel drunk, you know?
What's the percentage on those?
5.
I can handle
that. For those of you listening at home, Moosehead is a thing that they drank mostly in this film, and TJ was able to snag a 6-pack at one of our local...
a 12-pack.
Oh, shit. He's going to be wasted by the end of this episode, guys.
Yeah, this whole movie felt like a freaking a commercial for Moosehead. Because that's all they drank in this damn movie. I think I saw one Budweiser in the whole movie.
They never say that they're in Canada, but everything about this movie is so Canadian. So shout out to the Canadian listeners.
What you talking about?
They actually, the way they made it, I spoke to the director. He said he tried to make it look as if it was made in America. Obviously, the whole Canadian cast, they just threw that right out the window.
Do they have any mining places in the U.S.? Well, in California, anyways.
In the deserts, yeah.
But, Michael, what film are we covering today?
We will be covering the original 1981 classic My Bloody Valentine.
It's a bad time, this time of year. How many times is he going to tell this story?
Oh, let him tell it. I love fairy tales.
This ain't no fairy tale, little girl. If you don't take it seriously, you're a fool! Oh, yeah? Well, I
got a Valentine for her that she's never going to forget.
In this town on Valentine's Day, everybody loses their heart.
Roses are red, violets are blue. One is dead, and so are you.
However, I'm going to be covering the director's cut, which has the extended footage, which was released in 2009 after they were able to recover all those lost kills and beautiful scenes.
Exactly. Same here, man. I had to make sure I grab that one.
This reduce, or whatever Zahn wants to call this, go back to our back catalog. We have first review of this film, 1981. Michael was on it. But we're going to do something a little different this time. So, Michael, try not to rant about so much the politics behind this movie and more the movie at retrospective.
We'll be focusing all on the movie.
Okay.
Swear to whoever.
I mean, if you want to hear Michael's rant, go back and listen to the old episode.
I was wondering why the episode was 3 hours long, and then I found out. It's like, why are they getting back to the movie?
Everyone was dying of thirst. I had to give them some Haterade.
Well, don't shed a tear. Haterade is here. The new Haterade Thirst Quencher non-fruit juice comes equipped with 30 milligrams of potassium, 14 grams of carbohydrates, and 100% haterism.
I know. For those of you listening who haven't watched...
It was a two-hour-long Haterade episode, and then an hour of the movie itself.
For those that haven't watched Michael's favorite film, Valentine's Bluff, he gave a very in-depth description of how he felt about that.
Going back to all our listeners that's been following us for a while, we thank you. I'm going to get SoCal and Dime's perspective on it. When and where did they actually first discover this? I'm going to start with Dime since he, you know, was born in 1772. So he was during kind of like the mining community. So, yeah. So where were you? How old were you? How do you feel about this film?
Man, when this movie came out, I was, what, 781? So I was 8 years old when this movie came out.
Oh, damn.
So I didn't discover this film until, like, when I was walking down my VHS aisle video store. And I was like, oh, My Bloody Valentine. All right, it's close to Valentine's Day. Let's check this out. I picked it up, not knowing anything about the movie. You know, back then, we didn't have movie trailers. You got movie trailers when you went to go see movies in the theater. You know, I was thoroughly enjoyed by it.
You can you hear, like, the excitement in his voice when he explains that?
I'm more of a fan of the remake. I am of the original.
I think I've said it more than once on many episodes. I'm sorry, Dime, but we're going to have to let you go from corpses. Okay, man? What about you, SoCal?
I watched this movie for the first time. I know it came out in 81. I watched it the first time sometime within 10 years ago. I was just really getting to a big horror binge. I was just trying to find specifically 80s horror. And I was just trying to find anything I haven't seen already. You know, I was checking out Netflix, places I could stream. I was also renting videos. VHS were still able to be rented. I had like this really sweet video store for 99 cent rentals if it was anything from the 80s and you could have it for like a week. I did pick up this and, you know, mind you, this was the original, not this uncut version that Michael had mentioned later or earlier, but without all those kills, it just seemed like, okay. This is very 80s. This is a slasher. It was like entertaining, but didn't really stick out any difference between like Friday the 13th. If you'd watch that, you know, the more popular ones, I would have never thought that I would be reviewing this film 10 years later with a now deeper in-depth look at it. And also after watching this, you know, uncut version, I wish I had watched this version first. It would have definitely changed my perspective on the movie. I know it's just 9 minutes of lost footage. It really brought the movie together with its kills and its gore in those 9 minutes. And it's definitely worth watching. Changed my entire opinion about it.
I was probably maybe 18 when I watched this film. I remember I was watching some horror movie documentary. I don't remember what it was. And then it just kind of brought up all these fonts of these like 80 movies, slasher films, The Craze and whatnot. What I did is I paused it and I had written down every slasher film I could see on there. For some reason, My Bloody Valentine stuck out. I kind of liked the name. So did my little bit of research and then I found it. I don't even remember where I got it. I think I rented it. Maybe I fell in love with it the moment I saw it. Any other slasher film that's come after that past 1981? Because you got to remember, 1981 was the golden year for slashers. Everybody and their mom was doing slasher films. To me, this, and Michael can probably agree, this was probably a missed opportunity franchise.
Absolutely.
I loved the original cut. You know, I didn't care with the restored footage. That just made it even better for me. And overall, and I think when I met Michael and seeing how he's like the young gun and his passion for this, I was, dude, you know, when someone's into it, you kind of get hyped about it too. And that's how I felt, man. And I'm like, thank you, Michael, for like making me love it like a billion times more than I already did.
Aww. Well, thank you, because without your support, I wouldn't have been able to recreate half the things to cosplay for the movie.
I think I was his test subject. Yeah, I was like his test subject. So
if it sucks, don't blame me. It's my first try.
If I'm not mistaken, Michael, you saw the original, not the original, you saw the remake first, right?
I did. I was 8 years old when it came out in 2009. Immediately afterwards, my dad goes, all right, well, here's the original if you wanted to watch it. And for those of you wondering, yes, being 8, watching 2009, that one hotel scene was pretty awkward, but he just had his hand over my eyes when that happened.
So. Oh, so, okay.
Oh, you watched it together.
He's told your dad was totally cool with letting you watch people get slaughtered, but a woman running butt-ass naked out of a hotel. You can't watch this.
Denied.
Hey, this one's for me.
See. That is something that's so crazy in film, even when it comes to like the editing of films and what has to be cut. Like we said, this movie was heavily cut. You can show, you know, a boob on a movie, but if that boob is getting cut into, you got to cut it entirely. You know what I mean? It's like there's just this crazy distance between what's acceptable and what's not just because of horror. You know what I mean?
And then this movie came out 1 year after Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th came out in 1980. Correct?
Yep.
You're correct.
This came out the same year Friday the 13th Part 2 came out, along with Halloween 2. Yeah.
So these are like pioneers of the slasher franchise, basically.
I'm glad you brought that up.
It does have that Friday the 13th connection to it. I don't know if you noticed that. Because in the beginning, it says Thursday the 12th, right?
Yeah, they wanted to make as many innuendos and jokes to other slashers as they could.
Thursday the 12th, and then the Valentine's Day is on the 14th, which is Saturday. So that makes Friday the 13th.
And it's funny how, do you notice? Because I noticed it last night because, you know, I had a couple moose heads and I was like feeling a little giddy. So when they flashed Friday the 13th, and then I was telling Poison because I was watching the movie with her, I'm like, they left that Friday the 13th font on the screen for a good while compared to the other dates, you know?
I mean, didn't they do the same thing for Halloween? They like tell you what day it is of the week leading up to Halloween. It just seems like a thing they were doing back then. They wanted everybody to know what day it was. I'm glad you brought that up though, Dime, because I feel like with Friday the 13th, the original coming out just 1 year before, that was probably why the video, you know, editors really dug into My Bloody Valentine just 1 year later, because they let too much slide in that original film. They're like, you know what? Never again are we going to let this happen, this happen, this happen. If there's anything even close to resembling that, we're just going to cut it from a film and they can't put it in there. That must be why I got so much cuts from the final floor.
What sucks is there's still supposedly like 15 minutes worth of lost footage out there. We'll most likely never get it back because anything from that time period, the footage is probably rotten.
It could have been like over 2 hour, not over, but like roughly about a 2 hour film.
Yeah, the one I watched was what, 1 hour 50, and that was the regular because I couldn't find the uncut version. So I watched the original version, and that's still 1 hour and 50 minutes.
I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but like for me, this is a comfort movie. When I have comfort movies, it just flies by fast. I'm like, oh, it's already over. So what do? I loop it again, you know? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen. This movie doesn't really follow any of the traits. It is a slasher film, but it doesn't follow the rules of a slasher film.
Yeah. Those tropes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
That's all the films are doing.
That was another thing. Speaking with the director, I got a lot of insights in the movie and the way he made it. He wanted to be different from everyone else. You know, everyone had naked teenagers. He had working class adults. There's never one boob shown throughout the entire original movie. You know, everyone's in like the woods or these log cabins, things like that. It's just a normal town. So he wanted to subvert the entire slasher genre, be different as he could, stand out.
Well, he definitely stood out with that opening scene. I mean, flashback to the opening of the original Carrie, we get like a female shower locker scene and all that. It's a little cringy because they're in high school. But in this film, right towards the beginning, you get the, I believe, still holding the record for the largest nude all-male scene. And the director even said himself that when he had all these actors in there, he literally wanted them butt naked to film, even though he never planned on showing anybody from like the chest down, but he wanted to give off an authentic feel for each of the actors of how it would be to be a real minor in that time. I think it's unnecessary, but
make sure not to drop the soap.
They threw the soap.
What annoyed me about that scene, and it's not so much of a bunch of naked dudes just talking and act bullshitting around. No, I'm totally fine with that. It's just the amount of water pressure that was coming through the showers. And it's funny because they were really dirty and they had black charcoal all over their face. And then when they left Howard had to walk up all the way up, you know, and then so he turns on his shower and there's very little water pressure. And then that was just really annoying to me, you know?
Yeah, the actors are saying that it was actually freezing cold water. It gave that effect of hot water because they had the fog machine blowing into the shower.
What?
But they said the whole time it was just freezing cold.
So their nuts were all in their stomachs then, pretty much.
No one was looking cool. It was all shriveled up, man. They're like, just pretend like you're enjoying it.
Isn't it funny though? Like they're all grimy and dirty. And then when Dave threw the soap and it hit TJ, and TJ is the only one fully clean. He didn't even get anything. Little things like that throughout the movie pop up. We'll get into that as the review goes on. But yeah, I was just like, you know. Is it a perfect movie? No, but it's a fun movie and I love it.
The only parts of that movie is what comes on immediately after the shower scene. And that's the hillbilly music that plays as they're all getting in their cars to go to town. That's the only part of the movie that truly, like, they could have done without that. That as they're all getting ready to.
And who was it? Was it John? It was Howard panting Hollis.
Yeah.
You didn't need that.
Yeah. I know. You just seen him naked in the shower. Why didn't you see it?
Yeah. Why are you going to do that now? You know.
Double feature. I mean, that you guys had mentioned that maybe like they were trying to go for an American type of, you know, feel. So maybe that's why the banjo is more, you know, you don't think Canada when you hit a banjo.
That's true. I didn't actually think about it. Yeah, you're really right. It's like something from the South or something, you know?
Yeah, but when they are driving to town, though, guys, I do love that sign. The Valentine's Bluff sign with that big heart. And they just have this shining all night, even though
what is it? The little town with a big heart?
I think that's a big heart. Yeah. It's an awesome sign for a town with a population of 200 or something. It's a great sign.
And where was that filmed at? Where was the filming location, Michael?
Nova Scotia, Canada, and the Sydney Mines, or Princess Mines, I should say.
Those no longer exist. From what I've seen, it's a baseball field now.
Baseball field, a museum or something.
Yeah, no, they were completely shut down. They do museum tours every now and then, especially for the movie.
Road trip for me and Michael. Whenever they have an anniversary, I'm down to go, buddy.
Hell yeah. We'll probably do a 45th anniversary here in 2 years.
Okay, so I'll be 43.
Let's go to Canada.
That'll be 25.
Yeah.
Wait till the 50th. There.
And they'll ask, hey, who's the big kid behind you? I can make, oh, that's my kid.
Is this your son?
I'm old enough to be a dad. So the plot is very simple. I can't really explain it. I've been drinking too many moose heads. So, you know, why don't you explain it to us, Michael, for our listeners?
Looking into this movie all these years and studying it for as long as I have, and again, like talking to everyone from the movie, basically, it does get more complex the more you look at it. It is fairly simple in terms of, you know, in terms of a slasher movie. But like if you look at it more as like on a psychological level, like how past trauma as a little kid can create this monster, which is exactly what happened. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen it. The killer, you know, sees his dad getting absolutely mutilated. And that turns him into a killer. But in terms of dumbing it down, it is kind of simple, you know. People, they go out to party. Killer doesn't want the party to happen, so he goes out and kills everyone who's involved.
Where everyone?
Shut the fuck up!
Beware of what you make fun of, you little asshole.
Who?
You! Forget about having a party at all tomorrow night. Or you'll be sorry.
Hey, lighten up, Hap. Piss on Harry Warden and that damn old legend. We're gonna have ourselves a party.
Don't you go telling nobody.
Don't say I didn't warn.
That settles it then. We're going to the mine, we're gonna have ourselves a party.
Assholes. Damn, kids. I'll show them. Piss on Harry Warren, will they?
Well, I'll give them a scare they'll never forget.
And it leaves, like, the town in ruins, and they...
It becomes, like, a little folk legend, a folklore.
Exactly.
They come up with songs for it.
For, like, the past 20 years, the legend of Harry Warden's been haunting over. Yeah,
so,
exactly.
If I'm not mistaken, it takes place in 1960, and then Harry Warden comes back in 1961 and starts killing all these people, especially the two supervisors.
So this movie is supposed to take place 20 years after the Harry Warden incident, but I kind of wonder what made it now. Why now? I mean, we know who the killer is. Those who are listening, who have watched the film, you know who the killer is, but what made it now? Why did he start going crazy this year? Why did it take 20 years? Why didn't he start doing it once he hit 18, 21, whatever? I wonder what really like set him off right now to make all this events happen today. I don't know if you guys ever wondered that.
It was the first Valentine's Day dance since the event.
You know what? That's absolutely correct.
His love rival came back, who was the ex of his now girlfriend, Tom Haniger.
TJ.
That was it. Okay.
TJ.
TJ comes in. His girl's like, oh, well, hold on. TJ is kind of hot. And then he's all jelly. He's like, God damn it. He is hot. How can I compete with that?
Are we going to be spoiling, you know, this for, are we going to give away who the killer is now? Or should we wait till later?
It's a 44 year old movie. If you didn't see it before, come on.
Because that brings up this question. And I want you guys to think about this. So we all know that Axel is the killer and Axel is with Sarah, but at the very beginning of this film, the woman that he kills at the very beginning in the mine when the film starts, and that is the heart, I assume, that the mayor gets or sheriff, you know, the mayor gets in his little Valentine's Day box.
Hey, who said it? From the heart comes a warning filled with bloody good cheer. Remember what happened as the 14th draws near. It can't really happen again.
Does that mean that Axel was cheating on Sarah with that woman in the mine when he killed her?
I think he was just getting practice in. He's like, all right, I'm going to start up my killing spree. Who's an obvious choice? I'm going to go for the town Jezebel. I'll go for her.
Think of a word for that.
Yeah, it did have that Scooby-Doo type appeal to it, right?
Literally, you hear him like silently.
I like
whisper,
how he says
that.
He's like, no.
He's like, no, I got to kill you in a second.
I know, so she starts sexually caressing his tube. He can feel it.
Like that? That was a turn on? Really? Like,
I love your mind.
Caressing my ear.
Women love a man in uniform, you know?
I don't know if you guys mentioned it, but did anyone know who that girl's name, what her name is?
I do know.
Tell us, TJ.
So it was never actually said in the movie itself, but thanks to an author named Armando Munoz, shout out to him, he did the novelization for My Bloody Valentine, which explains in-depth characters, expands the scenes, and there's actually scenes that were supposed to be in the movie that were never in the movie, added in the book. It is a great read. I love this book. I've talked to the author many times. Super cool guy. I actually told him we're going to review this movie again. And, you know, he's listened to the first one. He liked it, so he can't wait for this one. I'm not saying, but if it comes to fruition, we might maybe get a novelization sequel book. Don't know. We'll see, you know.
Well, maybe since you read the book, you could answer, like, this question I was wondering, which is, if we all know that it's Axel that's the killer, and he kills this woman in the mine at the beginning, but he brings her down there, was he planning to cheat on Sarah this whole time?
It doesn't really say as much, though. That's the thing. You know, and just, I thought, you know, spoiler alert, Michael says things been out for like 40-something years. I thought, okay, they're going to explain how Howard died. They don't talk about that either. It's just, you know, but to going back, because I was just rambling on, the young lady in the beginning sequence, her name was Stella. And she was more of the, I don't know if you want to call it the town floozy or just the girl that everybody wanted in the town. You know, she had like big dreams, I think becoming an actress. And I think she worked at like a diner, if I'm not mistaken. I read the book when it first came out. I have to reread it again. 40 something year old mystery solved right there. With girl with heart tattoo dies.
Wasn't there not a graphic novel based on My Bloody Valentine?
Like a comic book?
Just released.
It was just released?
Yeah, they just released. I think there's a few of them. It's a series. Wait. Which is cool. I haven't read it yet, but I will be picking it up.
Like an actual comic book?
What did he say?
Yeah.
What? This is news to me.
Get into that.
I don't know. I got to look into that, man.
But what a strong way to start the film. You know, I love when a horror film can start with just a really good kill. It was short. It was sweet. If you watch the uncut version, you get to see just that little, you know, couple seconds more. But it just really kicks it off for what you're about to
do. And Dime, since you did not see it, so he punctures the pickaxe from her back. And you see the point of the pickaxe wiggling in through her chest.
Oh, nice.
So you see that little graphic.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try and find it.
It's a pretty big kill count, at least for a non-franchise horror movie. Now, do you guys, in retrospect, do you compare this movie or this horror movie villain tiers of like the Michael Myers, the Jason Voorhees, the Fred Kruegers? Or you think it's just kind of like a bottom of the barrel type thing?
I absolutely compare him. He stands out so much. First off, he's like the only killer who has a gas mask. I can't think of anyone unless they're in a video game. It's not a slasher. They're all military soldiers. I compare them to the stormtroopers from Star Wars.
Yeah, that's a totally different type of horror, but I get what you're saying, Michael.
And his weapon of choice is unique. I mean, you might see someone pick up a pickaxe, but you never see someone exclusively use like just a pickaxe. Which is a really horrible tool to kill someone with, but cool nonetheless.
For all the, let's call them scream heads or ghost face heads or whatever, Ghostface is the Swifties of horror.
They are.
True. I like that. We should make a sticker out of that. If you put Harry Warden against any version of Ghostface from the Scream franchise, Harry Warden would still come up on top. Like, that sounded weird. But, you know, he would end up murdering half that roster.
Well, he's 6'2" and over 200 pounds, so already he's got size and strength.
He looks skinny as hell, man. He looks like a little twig.
No, I actually meant...
No, he's got that Canadian lumberjack strength.
Yeah, I meant the guy who plays Harry Warden himself, or Axel Palmer, whatever. His name is escaping me for the moment. What is it, Michael?
Neil Affleck played Axel. Peter Cowper played the guy under the costume.
Yes, yeah, okay. So I met him. I met Peter, and he's pretty tall.
That's the one at CreepyCon, right? I think
me and Dime went to CreepyCon together, yeah.
I think I was in cosplay, and yeah.
It's funny.
He was like really nice, very talkative, you know.
It's funny, like I know it has nothing to do with the review or anything, but I remember Dime wanted to get a picture with Nick Castle, so we stood in line with him. Obviously, it costs and stuff like that. And my daughter had a Michael Myers sign that says, "Someone admires you." And kind of swooped underneath, and Nick Castle liked it so much he didn't even charge her. Just took a picture of her with her.
Nice, dude.
So I thought that was pretty cool. But anyways, yeah.
I remember that, dude. I snagged a photo too. I thought that was clever. Clever as hell.
So, and he took a picture with his personal phone of her, which was even great. But anyways, back to Harry Warden. I compare him in top tier boogeyman.
Probably like at the bottom tier for me.
What?
Because there's only one movie, My Bloody Valentine, that's it. I mean, yeah, you have this remake, whatever you want to call it. There's only 16 kills. I had 12, but I guess I didn't count the flashback scenes on it. You're looking at it as triple digits. Jason has triple digits. Harry Warden has 16. So
we're just talking about how the character, though, how he stands as his own standalone
just
character.
Just think of Harry Warden as Rocky Balboa, okay? Everybody loves an underdog. So when he finally gets his just due, and when he does his thing, it comes out, it's really good.
Well, yeah. I'm not disrespecting Harry Warden. Yeah, he is freaky as hell, dude. If I saw him coming at me, you know, down the mine, shit, I'm turning around and I'm running. I mean, I might piss myself, but I'm going to run away from this guy.
Dime, who would win in a fight, Harry Warden or John Carver? I put these films kind of, you know, close together. They're holiday slashers.
I was going to mention that. It's like just the simplicity of his costume, you know, his minor costume is just reminded me of John Carver in Thanksgiving. You don't need to be this big monster, beefy, like Jason looking guy. You know, a simple costume can still be scary as hell. You know, even though he does have the gas. As far as John Carver versus Harry Warden, I think Harry Warden is a lot scarier than John Carver.
I second that, man. I know Michael does too.
And then I fourth that, man.
If you're talking who wins in a fight, I mean, doesn't John Carver have guns? So I feel like that's cheating.
That's true. But I guess the only advantage is like he has some formal training because he is a police officer.
That's true.
We're getting rid of that. We're just going like knives and axes. I'm giving it to Warden.
Well, I mean, John Carver has that pitchfork. That's what he uses, or at least that's what I associate with him, is the pitchfork.
I had an axe, too.
Obviously, this movie actually made quite a bit of money. It was on a budget, obviously, for like somewhere around $2 million, made like $5 million at the box office. There was a sequel planned, but it just never happened. I don't know too much about that. I know Michael's like...
I do.
Of course, yeah.
Does anybody in here know anything about that, Michael?
Well, I know of Michael. There we go.
Yeah. Talking with George, the director, his plan, which the title for, he wanted to call Till Death Do Us Part, which I think My Bloodier Valentine would have been a better title. My Bloody Valentine 2, Till Death Do Us Part. I think he wanted to base it in the 90s, early 2000s. And when he went and pitched this idea, the studios loved it. And then they completely scrapped it in favor of doing a remake because everyone and their brother was doing remakes at that time. You had Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw, Halloween. So they're like, no, the remakes, they're in style. That's what we got to do. CGI blood and all of them.
In the last, five, six years? Now that's kind of faded out. And now all of a sudden, because of Halloween 2018, everyone's doing their like 40 years later thing. Me personally, I think that would have been cool. Do it 40 some odd years later. Me and Michael were talking off screen and how the concept would come about was really good. But like I said, Michael could explain that more in detail because he's obviously
it'll be nervous. A Harry Warden 40 years later with one arm, guys. One arm. He'll be a Harry Warden 40 years older with one arm. How's that going
to
work?
Well, Axel Palmer. Here's the thing. I was also thinking is you don't technically need to make a horror movie nowadays where it's 40 years later. You could just make it a few years after the first one. So just base it whenever the first one was made. I mean, they've proven that like 80s movies work if you still base them in the 80s. But
a good example was Totally Killer.
Yeah, I was about to say that. That name was slipping my mind, so I just completely ditched it. For example, the sequel for My Bloody Valentine, it was going to be the big plot of it was during the first movie, Sarah was actually pregnant with Axel's kid. They just didn't say it during the movie. And that was going to play a huge part in part two. He didn't tell me too much after that. He said, just in case I ever do get this project off the ground, I'm not going to spoil it. These are the little tidbits that I'll let you guys have. So I was grateful enough to have that. That's as far as part two goes. That's all I can really talk about it.
Well, I already know the answer, but would you guys like to see a sequel to this movie?
Just you mentioned it, I already want to fork out my money.
I mean, honestly, though, seeing what they did to the new Texas Chainsaw, the Netflix original, if they tried to make a sequel, I just kind of feel like 9 times out of 10, they will make it a modern day something happened. They're going to change up the killer. It's going to be something back with teenagers and some type of weird love triangle.
But
they're
going to retell the same story. You can't fault that for the directors or the writers. And that's why George hasn't really liked any of these ideas for sequels. It's the studio, I'm going to say it like 9 times out of 10, the studio doesn't even know what the people like to watch nowadays. They think they do, but they actually don't. And they're probably one of the like most clueless kind of types of people out there.
Not even the studio. It's like the MPAA, you got to worry about them as well. Cause they're like,
they've become more lenient.
They're more worried about offending people than, putting out a good product.
You're right, Dime. Like with the MPA stuff, cater it towards, once again, what have I said in the past? The hipsters. I hate hipsters.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I think about it, yeah, if they go back, do a sequel, but based, I don't know, maybe 5 years later in the 80s, so I'd be totally cool with that. The overall legacy, do you guys consider this a franchise or just kind of like a flash in the pan type thing?
It had the opportunity to be a franchise. If you could have made it My Bloodier Valentine or My Bloody Valentine, how Friday the 13th did, Jason Takes Manhattan, Final Chapter. If they did that with My Bloody Valentine with Harry Warden totally could have been a franchise.
Well, and I believe at the time, because it was done by Paramount Studios.
I don't know. I feel like once you get a toy, I'll consider you a franchise. And they have books. They got comic books now. They do have the remake. So you got two movies under the belt. I mean, and you look at other horror movies that only got like one title and they're still iconic. I mean, people are still making memes about them. I don't want to say American Psycho because technically it does have a sequel. Again, it does have enough content out there. Have enough content out there. You could consider MBV.
I 100% agree with what you're saying, Michael, because look at, for example, Terrifier. Terrifier only has two films under its belt, three obviously coming out soon, but it's created this boom. We love some Dimebag the Clown, but all these other clowns after that, just it kind of sparked this revolution. So I totally get that part, but I do, in my opinion, I believe My Bloody Valentine is a franchise.
Killer Clowns, there's only one movie. They've only ever made one thing. They've never made a book. They never made comic books. And what do you see at Spirit Halloween every year at Walmart? The socks, the t-shirts, the toys. It's the number one thing that's bought. Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Exactly. How come My Bloody Valentine doesn't get the same treatment?
It's starting to. It's cool. Every now and then I go to Walmart and I see the My Bloody Valentine action figures they have. I'm like, that's awesome. It's starting to grow a little bit of a cult following. And I do appreciate that. I think that's kind of cool.
You know, like if you want to go for your regular moviegoer that only watch horror movies in October, we're here at the Final Guys. We watch them all year round. Okay, if you show a picture of this guy, who's this dude with the hockey mask? Oh, that's Jason Voorhees. Who's that little doll? Oh, that's Chucky. Or that's Michael Myers. Okay, who's this guy in the gas mask? I don't know. Only diehards know who Harry Warden is. And I'm perfectly fine with that. Everybody like us fall in that realm of diehards. Harry Warden is the best kept secret.
I feel like you could tell if something is mainstream if Trick or Treat Studios is producing, you know, mass producing merchandise for it. And I have not seen anything for My Bloody Valentine yet.
Yes.
But who knows? My Bloody Valentine exclusive. One-to-one replica pickaxe, and this is the best made. Sorry, but I know Michael. I don't think that's true. You know, it's the best budget one, but if you want quality, come to Michael.
Laserdisc release, which I don't even own a Laserdisc player yet, and I still want to track down the Laserdisc. You know, I have, like, the VHS, I have the Blu-ray. Like, I mess with this movie so hard. Like, it's not, and I think I've said it on the original episode, it's not just my favorite horror movie. It's actually one of my favorite films of all time, in general. I will put that up there, rank it up with The Warriors or Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Like, all those films, it's something I'll never get tired of.
One reason it didn't grow in popularity as a franchise, because it's Valentine's Day. And Valentine's Day sucks. Unless you're married or in a relationship, but Valentine's Day sucks. I'll just say that.
That's what makes the movie even better. Like, you don't like couples? Watch a movie about couples getting murdered.
Yeah,
Going against it, man.
Dime, put yourself, you're like, I'm going to be Harry Warden. I'm going to take out all these happy couples, you know?
I could see it, man. Dimebag the movie. Another Valentine's Day slasher.
Hell yes. Make it happen. Dimebag the movie.
Coming soon to theaters.
And as all of our listeners know, TJ is our, you know, retro physical media collector. And me, myself, I love when things jump into that 4K media. And no pun intended, but shout out to Shout Factory for making this uncut version of My Bloody Valentine, the 4K. And it just always blows my mind when they can touch that 35mm and just press it to its limits and get you watching something that you feel was made this year or last year. The colors are intense. The sound is amazing. It just really revitalizes film, especially for some of our listeners that maybe you have a hard time watching older film. Maybe you don't like the way it looks. It's too grainy. It's not 4K enough for, you know, for you.
So this is the problem with SoCal. He's that typical old guy like, I'm being hip with the kids. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to like the new stuff.
I'm just saying, man, Shout Factory, dude, these people, they are boosting films up to 4K. Then, I mean, you know, us as horror lovers should be all over if you love, you know, the 4K version of things, because they are touching films that major studios don't even want to think is worth pushing into 4K. And it's unfortunate that this film couldn't just get a mass-produced 4K, because this is amazing.
I'm still waiting on my Prowler 4K release.
I wouldn't be surprised.
All I have is just, well, like I said, I have the VHS, I have the DVD, and I actually have the Steelbook Blu-ray. So it comes with both versions. I think it's from Shout Factory. Yeah, it is from Shout Factory, sorry. I got the combo. Didn't I get that from you? For you? Yeah.
Yeah, see? I said I got it right here. You got me the signed one.
Yeah, see?
I have it. There it is. I have it opened up for display.
And I think I did it for a discount for Michael. I don't remember. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, nice. the only 4K I own, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I like to watch films the way they were intended to be watched. So therefore, I want to watch My Bloody Valentine on VHS. That was released in 1981 or 1982, whenever the tape was released from Paramount.
In this town on Valentine's Day, everybody loses their heart.
It looks like Harry Warden's back in town.
In the town of Valentine Bluffs, there are many ways to die. Take your pick, My Bloody Valentine.
So I love that graininess look to it. It gives off a little more like eeriness to it. I mean, if I'm too lazy to load up my VCR or whatever, I'll just pop it in. The same amount of time, but that's besides the point, you know? So
I get where you're coming from, man. And that's true. Some people love the retro vintage look. I'm just surprised when they could take something that was filmed so long ago and make it look like it was filmed this year. It's truly stunning if they do it right. I have seen plenty of poor 4K restorations, but I would not call this one of them.
I think me and SoCal have been drinking a little too much because I feel like we're repeating ourselves. So, this is more not like a movie reveal. It's more like a retrospect of just the film overall. I don't think we should just do the normal kill count. We could just done that in the last one, at least I can remember. But what were your favorite kills? Like, I'm going to start with you, Michael. What was your favorite kill?
So for me, I loved, and it's the extended cut shows it more. Even without it, it's still a cool kill, but the extended cut is the bartender Happy. He goes, he makes this dummy to scare the workers because they don't believe that Harry Warden drew, so he wants to give him a scare. He sets up this dummy in a closet, and then he goes to check it one last time, and it's the actual killer, and he swings his pickaxe up through his chin and out his eye, and it just pops out, and they get a nice close-up of his gross. And then he slowly drags his body into the mine to use to scare people later.
The extended scene, maybe, I don't know if it's the extended scene or it was, you know, after that when he's dragging the body down. I felt like that scene took forever.
I kind of like that, though. Like, it shows, oh, fuck, this guy's heavy. I got to carry him all the way up just to set up the scare.
Just to show you that he's a normal guy. When Happy dies, that's actually 39 minutes into the film.
Give a little bit of a correction for you guys. He doesn't drag him into the mine, but when Sylvia is seeing all those suits fall down, he is actually hanging by one of those hooks. It's just protruding under his chin there.
Which takes place 53 minutes into the film. You know, there you go. I got times for everything, fellas. I got every time, you know.
Get those details in, man. That leaks into my favorite kill. I'm glad we just brought that up. You know, Michael went ahead and goes right into mine. The thing I didn't like about that, Michael, is that this dude is so happy with his work. He keeps going back to the door like, the little pickaxe goes up. And he checks this thing over and over and over. And he's getting a kick out of it.
He was.
But I like how his laugh. Like, he sounded so demented.
So pleased.
Like, he was so proud of himself.
But this goes into my favorite kill, and that is Sylvia. She is waiting for John to get back with the beers. All the suits start falling down. She's just getting scared because suits are falling. And I mean, if you don't know where it's coming from, that is pretty scary. At first, I was thinking, they're just suits. Why are you scared? But who's releasing them? That's pretty scary. But the way the miner just shows up there and lifts her up by the head, carries her all the way into the shower room. You know, mind you, this is the uncut version. Shows him sticking it, you know, the drain, the faucet into the back of her skull. And just like her expression, her facial expression, there's just so much emotion in it. You could tell she's dying. You know, she acted this out so well. And then after she's on there and dead, he turns on the water, which you later see is coming out of her mouth. I just love that kill. That part
was like a subtle jab, like, or like a little humor to it. You know, just, I'm going to turn the faucet on.
Take a shower now.
It's funny. So when John comes back in with beers, Did anybody notice? It irks me even to this day. Like I brought the booze, but when he shakes the can, you can clearly tell that that six pack is empty. It is so light, and the way he like wiggles it. You know what it reminds me of? I don't know if any of you guys watched it. I'm pretty sure you have, Dime. That one scene in Spaceballs where they had the Perrier air.
Yeah.
So that's how light it. Like I want, you know, that's how silly that scene was. But the gore effects itself was pretty solid.
How about you, Don? What's your favorite kill?
I'm going to have to piggyback on what Michael's pick was. Yeah,
Happy the Bartender.
Happy the Bartender, man. That was probably the best kill for me. I mean, it wasn't as gory as he thought it would be, but you could actually hear Harry switching the carries, like taking out the dummy, getting in place. You hear moving around in there. I was like, oh, all right, it's coming. As soon as he opens the door, he's standing there with the light on. I'm like, oh, hell yeah. And the pickaxe comes up. Dead.
See, in the uncut version, you do get to get a couple seconds longer, but you see Happy's eye poking out because the pickaxe went through and poked out the eye. I know. See, you said it's not that gory. I'm like, no, it is. You just missed it, man.
Yeah,
you
missed it. They gave it like 30 seconds of what you needed. I'm going to go real quick. SoCal's kill here, when he picks her up by the head. Another little thing that was told to us by George is he put out little secrets, little Easter eggs throughout the movie, because this was one of the very first whodunit killer movies ever. Like Ghostface, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure got a lot of inspiration from this movie. Killer Harry Warden, or the Miner, I guess you'd say, a lot of what he does is like what other characters that the film did. So earlier in the movie, Sylvia's lover, John, picked her up by the head that exact same way. Like he grabbed her by the head that exact same way. And there was other things where like, all right, this guy did this and this guy did that. So he kind of like copied those same movements or interactions.
Because then for split second, you could have thought it was John, you know?
Yeah, true. That's what he wanted you to think. But he didn't put too much, thought into like making this more stand out.
Yeah. When I seen that at the beginning,
just subtle details.
When her boyfriend picks her up, I'm like, if that's not some type of foreshadowing, only because it's so odd. I mean, you know, if you're a tall man and you're dating a short girl, who picks up your girlfriend by the head? And just, he kisses her at the beginning. That's how he picks up his girl by the head? Oh, man.
He's a bodybuilder and she's a small Colombian, so.
I mean, under the arms? I mean, come on, you know, under the arms, like a kid, sure, but you're going to pick her up by just the head and only her spine holding her together, dude?
Maybe he was a pro wrestler in town on the weekends. You don't know that.
But at the same time, this is Florida. Florida man rips off wife's head trying to give her a kiss.
Oh, Michael. Sorry, you? I was like, what?
Yeah, he said his brother picks up his girl by the head, and I said, dude, you're gonna hear Florida man rips off girlfriend's head trying to give her a kiss after work.
I'll get to my favorite kill. It was a kill off screen. Dime, you still got to track down that uncut. I do like Howard when he went chicken shit and he ran away from everybody. And so when Patty, Sarah, and Axel were climbing up the ladder because, you know, the killer, quote unquote, broke the control panel. So they're going up the stairs and then you see Howard's body hang. The way it dropped looked really rough. And then obviously the impact of the noose tightening rips the head off. When the body falls, you just hear that thump sound. That's karma, you know? I mean, you left everybody. Even in the book, I don't remember it said explaining how that happened. I wish it did. That's like one of those scenes.
I feel like that one's an easy to piece together one. Maybe he ran into Axel and they're like, hey man, let's take this elevator and get to safety. And then when they're at the top, he slits his throat. And that's why his head rips off so easily.
It's not my favorite kill. It's like a funny one. It's when Hollis gets the nail guns in his head. Obviously, he gets impaled by the nails twice, and it just looks like he went from sober to drunk in like 2 seconds.
Yeah, I love when you see like the blurry vision, like after he gets the first nail. I don't know how it would see if you have a nail in your head and your brain, but I like how they did put off that effect. So let me ask you guys something. Howard, he seems to be the asshole of this group. He thinks he's so funny, always playing jokes on everybody, you know, even from the beginning of the film where he puts all the paint on his head to scare the mayor. Do you guys hate this guy more or Shelley from Friday the 13th Part 3?
Shelley, I feel like, had mental problems. They definitely like kind of made it seem that way. Howard's straight up just an asshole.
Of course, he would like throw anyone under the bus just to save his ass. And you clearly saw that in the film. And look what happened.
Mm. Yeah, Shelley actually, you know, he tried to stick up for the girl, so.
That's true.
Yeah. That dude's just so self-loathing. Like, nobody likes me. And so is Howard, I feel like, in a way. This guy's just like, oh, I don't have a date for Valentine's Day, so I'm going to be really extra with all the women here, you know? Like, you want to jump on it and stuff? Like, bro, no one wants
Michael,
to jump on
let me ask you a question. Mm. After seeing this movie, years and years, whatever, did you ever attempt to snort beer up your nose after watching Howard do it?
No. Okay. I feel like you're going to tell me that you did.
I didn't. You did, Dime, did you?
Yeah. I tried that once.
How'd it go, Dime? How'd it go?
It didn't feel good. It's like when you're drowning, you got that water up your nose, but it just burns at the same time.
Of course it'd be Dime. Of course it'd be Dime. Like, given in total, 16 bodies, 11 guys, 5 girls. Now, I could just, you know what? Screw it. I'll run down really quick of just like every death. 3 minutes into the film, you got Stella.
Nah.
Obviously gets impaled. 12 minutes into the film, you get the trapped miners. 2, 3, 4, and 5. Then you have the two idiotic supervisors that caused all this in the fucking first place. You know, they died at 13 minutes into the film. Body count 6 and 7. Then you have this one kind of hit me hard and I didn't like it, especially after reading the book. It was Sweet Mabel. At 19 minutes into the film, she was killed off screen with a pickaxe. Now, obviously, the uncut version, you find her body, you know, spoiler alert, Dime, sorry. You find her burnt body inside her dryer, you know, with her eyes all bugged out and everything. Now, in the book, you get a little backstory on her. Back in her heyday, I guess you want to call it, she was like a heartthrob. They made her seem like she was gorgeous. You really see the character development of Mabel. After reading the book, it was hard to every time now to watch her die because I really like that character. And then the actress who they got to have play Mabel, she was very pretty. And I'm not going to lie. After I read the book and then I realized like in the movie of Mabel, I'm like, wow, Mabel's got an ass. You know? So I was super into that too. So
it
was tough,
man,
to watch her die.
How many of you guys have gone to a laundromat? One that you have to pay to use. How many of you guys have done it?
So many times for so many years.
There you go. We got all three of you. Perfect. Okay. You know you have to put in quarters for those things, right? You have to put in quarters. I mean, mind you, this is 1981. Maybe it's only one quarter or whatever. I wonder how many quarters Axel put in to make her be spinning in that dryer long enough for Sheriff Newby to find her. She was spinning all night long. You know, he put $100 in quarters in there.
When you see that scene, how many
when he finds her?
That scene actually made George Mihalka throw up. He came on set one day and they go, hey, George, check this out. They open up the dryer with smoke and meat. And he's like, oh my God, that's disgusting. That's perfect. Put it in.
Was it real meat?
Maybe. No, but I forgot what it was. I think they used like hamburger meat at one point to simulate something.
They're like, hey, burgers after filming.
I have watched so many horror films, man. So, yes, I'm a little desensitized, but that was something I wondered. Just that she got murdered at night. She got stuffed into the dryer, and she's been drying all night long. That's why she looks the way she does. That was just something I wrote down in my
notes. Turn off your brain, man. Turn off your brain.
Then next, we have 39 minutes into the film. We have, what is it, Michael's favorite kill, which was Happy, pickaxe.
Yep.
Then we have poor Sylvia, which, in my opinion, should have been the final girl. She was really pretty. Prettier than the final girl itself, Sarah. I mean, she just kind of, whatever, you know?
Yeah. See, right before her, though, we actually got David.
Oh,
David got
drowned
in the hot dog water.
So that's my second favorite kill because I love seeing the face boil. But also, if you die by getting drowned in hot dog water, you deserve it.
For my notes, I wrote...
Wieners floating in your face.
I wrote in my notes, head boiled along some weenies. And like, okay, so if you were a good person or a bad person, you know, let's just say if you, you know, believe in heaven and hell and you get to the gates, oh, what was your cause of death? I died death by weenies. I don't know. And then we have Mike and Harriet, which were pretty much nobodies in the film, but they needed a body count. They get impaled by a drill bit, but you don't really see it.
One of the cutscenes.
Yeah. Oh, was that an actual cutscene?
There, I have a picture. There's only one still left throughout the entire like footage that they did find, where you actually do see him take a drill and plunge it through them. Mm-hmm. Sadly, we'll never see it.
I got a chance to hear from the director watching their 35th anniversary regrouping of the director's vision for that. He was going to show a bit of a sex scene with Mike thrusting away, and while Harry, or I guess Axel, sticks in the drill into Mike's back, you see him give a really hard thrust, and that was going to give Harriet like a really good response, which was going to have her open her eyes and notice that it's actually Axel stabbing a spike through her. And only in then would she get her final, you know, goes in and he pushes it all the way through. And then they end the scene with a mouth, you know, bloody kiss, locking their lips. He was trying to be very sensual and loving, but I guess the MPA was not dealing with it. So they cut the whole
thing. Oh, so that's why they call it double penetration.
Nasty ass bastard! Nasty, man!
That explains it.
That was 1 hour and 8 minutes into the film. And then I said, like, we got Hollis, 2 minutes later, nailed gun to the head where he looks from sober to drunk. I already explained that. And then you have the chicken shit Howard at 1 hour and 17 minutes, you know, body hung and decapitated. And then I think so 1 hour and 22 minutes in the film, which I think is probably the weakest kill, but mostly the funniest, was Patty, who got a pickaxe to the gut. And to me, her reaction looked like she just took a big shit. That's how I got it.
She was amazed by how big the shit was. She was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, I did that.
The uncut scene dime, it does just show her face of surprise a couple seconds longer than the theatrical cut gives.
Have you guys ever heard of a YouTuber called Cody Leach?
I don't believe so.
Okay, well, look him up. Maybe if you saw his face that you would recognize him, and I follow him and I like all his reviews. He does horror. He does actually a bunch of other movies. I wanted to get his opinion on what he thought of the film. The moment I saw him, like, I was like, man, fuck you. Like, he hated this film.
You bastard!
I like the remake better. I mean, the remake is really good, but nothing compared to the original. So I was like, dude, you let me down, man. I unfollowed him after that.
Oh man. Yeah, this guy got a lot of followers, man. 136K. Ooh.
Yeah. We're going to wrap this up. Obviously, we've talked about way too long, probably a 3-hour episode. I don't know. I'm just kidding.
So, Kel, Michael, the mayor, he reminded me so much of TJ, of you. And he's like, oh, candy. Okay. I don't know. It was just stuff that he would say just reminded me so much of you.
Now I know what I would be when I'm like 60-something years old.
That's pretty crazy, man.
What's the gore meter on this? Okay.
There was something I was wondering, though, guys.
Okay.
What were your guys' thoughts on this final battle? This whole movie is going out. We got kill, you know, who's the killer? You know, we got this whole thing. And then you finally got the battle between TJ and Axel. Do you guys feel that final battle was actually
good? It was the
good
battle I've always wanted to see, a pickaxe versus a shovel.
Yeah, exactly. What about you, Michael?
I thought it was a fitting ending. Mining tool. They're on the little train cart thing going all the way up. And then you have the cop, the entire town rushing down. And you also don't forget you had Sarah there in the background providing support, hitting him with a rock.
He's like, yeah, you could do it.
I know, right? And Dime, what do you think about this final battle? Was it worthy, or did it just seem kind of deadpan?
No, it was definitely worthy. Like Michael said, you know, it's definitely fitting for what you got. You were in a mine. You're fighting with mine tools. The one part that I caught is Harry jumping into the mine train, and then the next scene, he's climbing into the mine train. But clearly, you see him jump in there.
Wait, okay, you reminded me of a perfect scene, Dime. I get what you're saying. It had like that Scooby-Doo element. Do you remember after Harry Warden, Harry Warden is here, everyone get the fuck out, and everyone runs and stuff. So Axel's talking to TJ and saying, Hollis, Sarah, blah, blah, blah. They're already down in the mine. We got to go get them. But they run. It's funny, fully clothed in what they're wearing right now. And then they go out. And the moment they walk out of the rec hall, they're already in their gear. Like, it's like supposed to be one scene. It reminded me of the Batman 60s TV show. When they run down the pole and they're already dressed.
This whole Axel, TJ, Sarah, love triangle. This thing really stood out in this view, and I'm just thinking that everybody knows that couple. Everybody has that couple in their friend group. That one just kind of brings drama to the entire group, and everybody has to deal with. I feel like they cut down the mood several times when they're like, let's do the Valentine's Day party at the mine. And the first thing they do is get in a fight about their relationship or past relationship. She'd rather be with me. And then like the whole mood cuts. And of course, Howard, that's what you guys said, snorts the Coke or whatever soda and just tries to like pick up the mood. It's like, why is it the whole time you guys are just drama? Just let it go, man. It's Valentine's Day. Hook up with someone else.
I think we've babbled on about this great, super underrated 80s slasher from 1981. So we're going to give it, what's the gore meter? What do you give it, Michael? 1 to 5 pickaxes.
For gore, especially, and considering the time of when this was made, like the what they had available, I'm giving this full on 5 pickaxes.
You know what? I'm gonna piggyback off that too, Michael. I'm gonna give it a solid 5. Maybe I'm being biased because I love it, but it gets a 5 nonetheless.
All right, so guys. Kelly, you wanna give out your rating?
Yeah, I'm like, no one's saying it.
I know. That's why I was waiting for someone to bring it up, man. Say who's coming up next. I have to piggyback off both of you guys. You know what I mean? We got a love triangle going on. Given the era, given what you know, watching what they had cut out, the gore in this movie is actually amazing. It actually is great and way better than my first experience watching this film, having all that cut out. Those couple minutes that you missed really do just add so much to each of the scenes. And I have to give this film as well 5 out of 5 on the gore meter. Dime, you watched the theatrical version. So what did you think of the gore meter?
Yeah, you watched.
I would have to agree with you guys on a 5, but I'm going to have to give it a 4. Since I watched it,
he's like the odd man out.
Yeah.
Not by his choice, not by choice though, you know?
Yeah, not by choice. I couldn't find it. You know what? I'm going to bump it up to a 4.5 because I definitely want to go back and I want to watch it in the unrated version. 4.5 ain't bad.
For our final rating of this movie, I'm going to stick to the same damn thing I did in our first episode. I'm giving this a solid 5 gas mask.
Same here. Again, being biased or not, one of my favorites, probably my favorite horror movie of all time. Getting a 5. 5 out of 5. I should say 5 out of 5 gas masks. What about you, SoCal?
Man, you guys are giving this one solid 5s. It is an amazing movie, and I did really enjoy rewatching it. I always think of a film when I'm doing my rating is there anything that made me not enjoy it? And I think it's just a little bit of, if you really look at this cast of, we can't say teens, but adults, they're just really unlikable right from the start. They're constantly giving drama. They're constantly just trying to grab ass at each other. They don't really care about, you know, women at all. You know, TJ throws his ex-girlfriend in a car and says, "You're coming with me." She's like, "I don't want to go with you." He says, "Shut up and get in the car." That just had to knock it down just a tiny notch, but I do enjoy,
I guess, abduction is okay in Canada because I'm here.
Exactly. It is 81 too. Exactly. But I did love this film, and I would recommend anybody to watch this film if you haven't already. I am giving this film a solid 4.5 out of 5. That this is a great film, worth watching. Dimebag,
I warned you once, I warned you twice. If you skip my bloody Valentine, you'll pay the price. Give us 5 out of 5 gas mask for me.
So I got one more question for you guys before Michael brings this episode to a close. Can you name any other slasher in any film now, then, maybe possibly the future, that has its own ballad? I can't think of anyone except Harry Warden.
Only other thing I could think of is like the 1-2 Freddy's Coming For You, but I don't think that counts.
That's like a nursery rhyme. Yeah,
not quite a ballad. That is a very good point, TJ. I can't even think of another killer that has a ballad based off of them. This one has an amazing one. There's actually an amazing cover. And Michael, who did that cover?
And the cover is actually done by an amazing artist, Katja Savia. You can find her on Instagram and YouTube. She will be our outro song for this episode.
I love the original, but the her version is really creepy.
Yeah, dude, like, props to her. TJ, how did you even, like, get the rights to this? Like, how did you hit her up?
Hey, I have a podcast, like, and she was very nice. I have a podcast. Can I use that on the episode? And she goes, of course you can. You know, all she asked was just credit. And I'm like, done. Super nice.
Guys, look
and
her up.
I think I've listened to it like 20 times in the course of like 2 days.
Yeah, everyone, listeners, look her up. Look up her version. You're going to hear a little clip of it after this episode, but this definitely adds that eeriness to this already spooky ballad.
All right, guys, that wraps up this episode for Final Guys here on Corpses for Conversation. Obviously, you all know me, Michael Hardesty, signing off.
I'm Toxic Jay, a.k.a. Evil Dead Batman.
I'm Bag the Clown.
And SoCal Leatherface.
Now, why don't you make like a tree and get out of here.
And as always, be kind and rewind.
All right, guys, this took longer than usual. Our boss is going to kill us.
What are you, Jimmy, staring at? Back to work!
We have to get back to Hanniker Mine. All right, let's get dressed, guys.
This little town where the 14th comes round, there's a silence and fear in the air. Remember the morn that the legend was born, all the shock and horror was there. For the legend, they say, on the Valentine's Day is a curse that live on and on. No one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago.